Hello, friends, and welcome to the Healing Ground Movement. Now, for more content and bonus features, you can join us on Facebook and Instagram. And remember, all of our content is delivered freely, so please consider supporting the show by donating via the link on our website at healinggroundmovement.com or liking and reviewing the podcast on your favorite platform. Thank you for listening, and I hope you enjoy today's enlightening interview. Hey everyone, today's episode is brought to you by ButcherBox. ButcherBox partners with people who are dedicated to doing the right thing, never cutting corners and always looking for ways to improve. Discover why they're the trusted source of high quality protein for families across the country. At ButcherBox, they believe in better. For them, that means caring about their animals and the planet, treating our planet with respect. It means improving the lives of animals and the livelihoods of farmers, and ultimately it means better meals enjoyed together. The protein from ButcherBox is never given antibiotics or added hormones. It's humanely raised. Our family loves the convenience and quality and knowing that we are getting humanely raised and sustainably harvested protein. You can customize your box with the right amount of food and variety of meat to fit your family's individual needs. If you're interested in getting a special offer, go ahead and head to healinggroundmovement.com/resources to follow the link for ButcherBox. Hey everyone, welcome to another episode of the Healing Ground Movement podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Carly Hudson. Today we have joining us Madeline Black. She uses her lived experience of sexual violence to end the shame, stigma, and silence through storytelling and to help others find their courage and voice too. She does this through her podcast, her book, and a phenomenal TEDx talks. She's going to join us today and talk a little bit more about that healing and storytelling. Madeline, thank you for joining us.
You're welcome, Carly. Lovely to be with you.
Like, so we hear a lot about trauma and trauma recovery and all these different ways that we can dive into healing ourselves and kind of arriving at a new place in our life. And this is something that you had to take on quite personally as kind of a lifetime of a journey. Can you tell us a little bit about kind of where you began and how you ended up here today?
Yeah, well, you know, if anyone is listening, it definitely wasn't an overnight fix. It's been a process, you know, it's definitely not a sprint. It is a marathon. It's taken me a long time. So I can speak very freely and openly about it now because I'm really okay. So I think when somebody's listening and it's maybe had a similar experience, that's hard to understand. But behind all of this is a ton of therapies and talking therapies and body therapies and lots of different types of work. So as you know, my story starts when I was 13, when I was raped by two men. It was very violent and very nearly died. And it obviously impacted on me in many ways. I had many, many side effects because of it, mainly guilt and shame and fear. But I was, I just numbed out, you know, I just cut myself off from thinking, feeling, speaking, really, eating, attempted suicide. I became very suicidal. I spent a good few months in a children's psychiatric ward. I had my 14th birthday in a psychiatric ward. And for a long time, I was shut down. But I met my husband when I was about 17, which is now quite a while ago, about 38 years ago. And slowly through him and reversing the decision not to become a mum, I now have three girls. You know, it has taken a long time, but I have finally got there. I got to a point in my life where I just became determined not to let my past experiences affect my future, because it was like a cloud always hanging over me, impacted every part of my life. Mm-hmm. And I just became determined when I reversed that decision, not just to become a mum, but to live my life as best as I could. I just didn't want to be identified, you know, by what had happened. So it's been a journey of stop and starting, because I think trauma is multi-layered. We think we're okay, we've done enough work for a while, and then bam, something happens, and then you think, oh, I thought I'd worked that. Why is that coming back? So really, the bulk of it came back when my eldest daughter was 13. Mm-hmm. I was studying psychotherapy. I was doing loads and loads of personal development, and she was 13, so obviously the same age that I was. And just was flooded, is the only way I can describe it, overwhelmed with flashbacks and pictures and nightmares and memories and body sensations. And I really just thought I was bonkers at that point. I thought I must have made it up. Because I'd worked for years in women's organizations. You know, I'd worked at Women's Aid for about 14 years, Rape Crisis for about 6 years. And I thought, well, I've just ingested all of these stories, you know, that this isn't really what happened to me. And I got to see over time, actually, my refusing to accept what happened was actually now causing me more discomfort in my head than actually the memories themselves. And I saw if I didn't accept what happened, I had the potential to really drive myself crazy. So I had to get to a place where I finally had to go, okay, this is what happened. This is not a reflection of me. I'm not my body. I, you know, I'm not what they did to me. All of us are so much more than the events in our life. And it's done. You know, these are pictures I'm being seen. It's not happening anymore right now in this moment. And that's really, I guess, out of everything that I've done, is learning to be in this moment, because all my fears and phobias, which I had many, many, were all based on what had already happened or were based on what could happen. And actually, neither of them were happening. If I stayed steady with the right here, right now, I was okay. So that's kind of a very long answer to your question there.
And I think that reaches out to and grasps a lot of things that as we go through the many traumas that come in and out of our lives, and the big T traumas or the little T traumas, there is this negotiation that we have with them, with the reality of, did they happen? And could I, the way our brain tries to separate and say that we're making it up and remove us from that situation. Yeah. All of these very, you know, loving defenses from our thinking brain to try and save us from it. But in a sense, it kind of keeps us frozen in that moment because we're constantly trying to dodge around something.
Yeah, it's a total paradox. You know, on one hand, it's an amazing safety device, as you say, but yet it prevents you from living. It just froze me and it numbed me out. And I was just like on, you know, just was just going through the motions of life. I really wasn't living life. It was just, what it really had prevented me from living my life. So it had done such a good job. It protected me. It protected me from living, really.
From everything. Yeah. I love from your TED Talk, this beautiful quote that you kind of start with towards the beginning is, what we don't speak leaks out of us.
Yeah.
And can you talk to us a little bit about what you mean by that? It just, I think it encapsulates so much in such a beautiful way.
Yeah, well, you know, the very last thing that they said to me was if I speak about it, that they would kill me. And they held the knife against my throat at this point, and they'd already used this knife on me. So I took one of them definitely very seriously. One of them, I looked into his eyes and I thought, yeah, he could kill me. And so I took it very seriously. I didn't speak. I really became mute for about 3 years. But it's got to go somewhere, you know. We can't ingest all that trauma, especially at a young age, and it not to have an impact. So, yeah, I do believe that what we don't speak about leaks out of us. It's got to come out. So it came out of me in the form of depression, eating disorder, paranoia, fears, phobias, anxiety, suicidal attempts, promiscuity. I think maybe when I look back, a lot of it was just a biological response, but I think maybe I was a real rebel, and I think maybe I was just hoping if people saw how badly I was behaving, they would think that something must have happened to me. They could guess the worst thing possible, because I literally could not make the words come out of my mouth, and it took me many, many years to even be able to say the word rape. And I can remember when I was studying, I went for a supervision session when I was studying psychotherapy, and somebody had written on the blackboard therapist, and they put a line between the E and the R, so it said the rapist. And it was obviously about doing bad therapy, you know, it was quite an extreme lesson, whoever was getting lesson. And even to see the word written up on the blackboard freaked me out. So, yeah, really just what you said, how I minimized it, how I pretended it didn't happen, how it wasn't that bad. And maybe I've really made this up. And then my therapist would say, why would you make this up? You know, if you're going to make up anything, would you not think of something a bit better than that to make up? And, oh, but it might not be true. Of course it's true. Look how your body's reacting. Look how you're reacting. Look at everything that's going on, how you're living on edge, your PTSD, all of it constantly on guard, you know, always on duty. So, yeah.
I love it. Why would you make that up? Why, you know, just having that reality and believing victims and believing the trauma as it happens in our life is it's not something that we ever ask for or ever are looking for. I'm just like, you know, I would really love a reason to be miserable and destroy my life and send that off the rails so that I can have desperate cries for help.
Yeah, or spend hundreds of thousands of pounds in therapy.
Yeah, like this, but the logic and the reasoning, you know, it escapes us. I mean, that's not what trying to dodge this, the elephant in the room, is about. Because logic and reasoning would be looking at this elephant head on and acknowledging its presence and acknowledging. In some ways, and I'll use this very gently and ask for you to expand on this, acknowledge its place in your life and in your story. Where did that, you know, so you did so much work and were able to start to get help as you lived through and survived your own destructive coping as a teenager, but came back around for you when your daughter was 13. So what started that real transition in healing where now you can speak about this so publicly and comfortably without re-injuring yourself? Because again, just as you acknowledged at the beginning, really want to drive home, this is not a light switch.
No, absolutely. I think I just got tired, so tired of being ashamed. You know, I was ashamed for a crime committed against my body, and it took me many, many, many years to work out it was nothing to do with me. You know, the shame was never mine. It wasn't to do with the alcohol I drank or the clothes that I wore. It came down to the fact that these two men chose to rape me, and that was it, nothing else. And so I was invited to do a newspaper article not that long before I had gone public. And they said, can we put your photo? And I said, no. Can we put your name? And I said, no. So I was one of these, you know, like silhouetted outlines, and a newspaper article just said, Madeleine, whatever, from London. And, you know, the panic when they said, can we put your photo? And then I was asked by the Forgiveness Project to share my story. And they said, you know, you could be anonymous. And I just thought, I'm tired. I'm so tired of being ashamed and holding the secret for years and years. And yes, I didn't do it lightly. I was scared. I was worried about the reaction because a lot of my friends, you know, they didn't know what happened, or if they did know, they didn't know it was near fatal. And a lot of my family didn't know all the details. But I just thought, I just can't hold on to all this shame anymore that's not mine. I just suddenly, I think after the years and years of therapy and the body work, it just made me realize that it was nothing to do with me. It wasn't even personal. I was just in the wrong place at the wrong time. And, you know, I'm not what happened to me, but it took a long time for me to be able to work that out. And so Marina, who is the founder from the Forgiveness Project, she calls us story healers rather than storytellers. And I just saw the moment I shared my story with them publicly, it kind of went a bit viral, that healing power that comes when we share our stories, you know. And I realize now I'm really, really in a good place. This is almost like maybe like my duty or responsibility. If I can share my story with no shame attached to show people you can go through some really nasty stuff in life, but you can come out really okay. If anything now, I'd say it's maybe post-traumatic growth. You know, I've really grown through what I've gone through. I just wanted to give people hope that we can speak about the difficult stuff. And if it makes other people feel uncomfortable, they should be uncomfortable because, you know, they should be disturbed because somewhere every day on our planet, a woman, a man, a child will be abused or raped in some way. So once I found my voice, it took me forever. I just thought I'm going to use it now. I'm not going to be quiet anymore. So yes, it's been a journey to get my voice. And it was initially terrifying because still I had judgment and shame. But the more I speak, the shame is gone. It just evaporates and dilutes completely.
That's beautiful. And there is so much about the power of storytelling and the power of speech. And I think, you know, we see that in these traumatic events, and certainly very specifically the one you experienced, where the point is to take away that voice and to say, if you talk about this, I'll kill you, or don't you dare, that internalizes and controls and creates a cycle because there is no place for help outside of yourself. What is the power of storytelling, of story healing that comes out of that forgiveness project?
They are an organization. Obviously, it's all around forgiveness, and they collect stories of forgiveness. So I'm just one of like 200 or more stories. There's loads of stories, loads of completely different stories, just to show people that it's possible to transform your pain into something else, you know, transform mm-hmm. your pain into purpose or into hope or into healing. And they also have stories from people like me that have been victims of crime, but people that have also been perpetrators that had to look for forgiveness. And they do a lot of restorative justice. I've worked with them within the prison systems, and we do a lot of personal development groups. It's maybe over 3 or 4 days. It's called Restore, and it really is based on storytelling. So somebody like me will go in, and someone that's maybe been in prison or been a perpetrator, and they would both, we'll both tell our stories, and we encourage the women. I've only worked with the women so far. We kind of do like a lifeline, and they'll maybe choose 5 events, and then they get to see the prison warden is just like them. These visitors are just like them. They're, all of us in that room pretty much came from a place of trauma. We all had some nasty stuff going on in life. I'd say about 99% of the women I've worked with had been raped or abused at some point in their life. And it really just to, for them to see the humanity in themselves and the humanity in others, it just cracks something open. It's the most intense but beautiful work I've ever done.
Well, and that's what stories really do is they unify us. We see storytelling, we see these ways of acknowledging feelings and acknowledging emotions, acknowledging journeys across cultures. And within each of these stories, there is something that we identify with. There is a detail, an emotion, a pivotal choice that is ours as well. And suddenly we find ourselves within community. We find ourselves within a normal place to be, even if it's a place no one ever wanted to end up.
Yes. Somebody said to me, they sent me a message about my own podcast show. And she said, I don't relate to every single story, but every single story I can relate to something. Mm-hmm. You know, the person says, even though the story is not their story, every time they can hear something in it that they relate to. So mm-hmm. they're so healing. And also then I think when I speak out and share my story of rape, it gives somebody else permission because I'm standing on the shoulders of other people. It was me hearing someone else being brave and courageous that helped me to find my courage. And I know that courage is really contagious. You know, mm-hmm. if I speak out, it will help someone else speak out. And I know that, you know, I've been very lucky. I've been interviewed by amazing people. There's famous British broadcaster called Sir Trevor MacDonald, who was a journalist and a broadcaster for years here, still does work. And I was invited on his show as BBC Radio 4. And to cut a very long story short, my friend's mum was listening, who was 81 at the time. And she mm-hmm. told her daughter she had been raped as a teenager. And that was the first time ever in 64 years. Because she heard a woman on the radio realise it wasn't her fault and she had nothing to be guilty or ashamed about. Mm-hmm. And that's the power that comes of sharing stories. So, I just think of her every single time that I speak out because we don't know the ripple effects. We don't know where it goes or who it reaches, but it will reach someone without a doubt.
Absolutely. I love it. And what an incredible gift and what an incredible ripple. And that's, you know, we share a lot of these conversations here on our podcast as well, which is, you know, ways that we heal and ways that we have to struggle with healing. And just like you talk about on your podcast, it's not that this is the experience that everyone has gone through, but there is an element. There is an element of struggle, an element of success, an element of surviving that we can all see ourselves in and find that grace for ourselves. And hopefully, I love the courage is contagious. You know, spread that instead of fear.
Absolutely.
And where did forgiveness show up in your healing and recovery as well?
Yeah, you know, I always call myself an accidental forgiver. I would never, ever intended to forgive them because I was so opposite to how I am now. I was filled with hate and revenge and anger and plotted these really cruel fantasies against them so they could really get it and know what the impact of what it does. You know, it's not one night, it's forever, or it felt forever that the impact would last. But near to the end of these 3 years of therapy, my therapist turned around one day and he kind of wondered out loud, He said, you know, maybe they weren't born rapists. Just this question, one question that went into my head. And I thought, how, you know, how dare he say that? First of all, I was so angry with him. But he just really got me thinking. And I thought, yeah, how did they know to be so violent towards somebody else? You know, I do believe that we are all born the same. When you look at a little baby, that we're all just a blank sheet, and somehow we get conditioned, we get corrupted by life. And I just really found myself on this journey of inquiry, wanting to understand how two young men, they weren't really much older than maybe like 17, 18, how did they know to be so violent? What had they seen or heard or even experienced to make them think it was okay to treat another human being like that, totally dehumanize me and just, you know, treat me as if I was nothing. Mm-hmm. And yes, somehow, I don't know where, I felt compassion in my heart because I thought I've done a really good job of living my life, but they have to live with what they've done to someone else. And in my head or heart, I thought, that's going to be harder. I can heal, but they've really hurt someone, you know. Mm-hmm. They've got to live with that. And then I thought I could cut all ties with them completely, break the chains, you know, that linked me to them of my past by choosing to forgive them. And I do say in my TED, as you know, that I'm not a forgiveness preacher. I don't say that the only way to heal is to forgive. But this really, this is how I did it, how I chose to do it. And it was nothing actually to do with them. I didn't need to meet with them, have a conversation, sit down and have lunch, discuss it. I could make that decision silently and quietly in my heart. And it really, I guess, was an act of self-love. It was totally self-empowering because it just allowed me to bring in compassion, understanding, surrender to the facts and just let it all go. It really did.
Love it. And I think I have a couple of different directions I want to go, so we might keep circling back. But
no worries.
I think there's a real good distinction to be made. And again, not to be we don't advocate there's a one way for anything ever here on our podcast. So certainly in that regard with forgiveness as well. But as we're talking about that today, I feel like there's certainly a distinction that should be made between, you know, giving forgiveness and that act of self-love and what is so often associated with forgiveness, which is making amends and that sort of burying the hatchet so you can go on together with someone. Mm-hmm. And these are two very separate acts and very separate.
I never want to see them or sit down and have lunch with them or anything. You know, they're not my friends. And I get that asked a lot, would you like to meet them? I'm like, no, not really. No interest, you know. Mm-hmm. But I saw that me holding on to all this anger didn't affect them in any way. So it's never about them. It was always about a way for me to just let go of all the negative stuff that I had been carrying for years and years and years. And it's not saying I'm not forgiving the act of rape. I could never, ever do that because it was a total violation, not just on your body, but your mind and your psyche. I would never forgive the act of rape, but I could forgive them being human, you know. Yeah. I just think that we are a very immature species living on a planet and we have a lot to learn. And I just saw that one of them especially was more, in my eyes, he was more animal than he was human. He just wasn't a very evolved human being. And in some ways, it's not their fault. That's how they came in and that's how they developed or didn't develop. So, it was never for them. It was always for me.
Yeah. And can you expand a little bit more? You just touched on, forgiving the act or forgiving the person and having there be a distinction in that. Because I think as you go on in your TED Talk, you speak about, you know, the act remaining and the event remaining in your life as a fact, as an unchangeable thing. Yeah. And there are different ways that you engage with the act versus the person in that self-love and forgiveness.
Yeah, well, we can't change what happens to us. We can only change how we feel about what happens to us. And for a long time, I felt very negative and very, very affected by it. And I realized I can't change history. That's never going to happen. I have to change how I am towards it. And that refusal to believe all the memories I was being shown, and it comes back when we're ready to receive the memories, even though we don't believe it, but actually your mind is telling you, you are actually ready now to get all this knowledge. So that's hard because for a long time, as we spoke about before, it protects you and keeps you in this bubble. And when it comes back, it's like, whoa. So yeah, it's not forgiving the act, never forgiving the act, but it's just recognizing the humanity in them as well, I guess, you know? We'd like to think that rapists are bogeymen that jump out of the bushes, but the facts are, especially in the UK, is that most women or men will know their attacker, will know their abuser, because most women are married to their rapist for a start, or it's their partner, or it's a dad, or it's their friend, it's their neighbour, it's their cousin. It's not very usual, actually, that women are or men are raped by a stranger. So we have in our head that it can't be a brother or a father or a you know, a neighbor. But yeah, they are just everyday kind of guys. We as women, you know, I'm sure I speak for you as well. I don't know many of my friends that haven't been touched by sexual violence, sexual assault in some way, sexual harassment. So if we all know that, we all must know rapists and abusers as well. They're part of our society. They are. We live amongst them. So it was to, I guess, recognize their humanity as well. That really was, I guess, the forgiveness part, but never, ever excusing or forgiving the act of rape, never.
And it really seems to give an opportunity, especially when you look at the part of humanity that we're all in. And those statistics for the UK are same for the United States. I don't know the percentage off the top of my head, but it is the lion's share of violence is from a known perpetrator. And so having that space to acknowledge humanity for what it is, to me also gives an opportunity to expect more. Because if we can't call, if we can't say what a situation is, if we can't say what the elephant in the room is, we can't. We also can't ask humanity, we can't ask the world to be better and to do better. And I think that's a lot of where some of the Me Too movement came around is let's acknowledge what is happening around us, what we are accepting in the humanity experience of our fellow people. And call it what it is so that we can do better and not forgive the act, but focus on the person, on the interpersonal.
Yeah, absolutely. And the Me Too movement, you know, it really helped so, and it's not just a moment. People say it was a moment, it is a movement. It helped so many people to find their voice that had been silent for so many years. So it did incredible stuff and it went all around the world. It was amazing, again, the power of sharing our stories. And it was just written down on a little tweet. It was on Twitter to start with. But even that, you'll still go search Twitter, hashtag Me Too. You will find it's constant. Every day it's being used.
And so as we think about healing and forgiveness, it brings us to the next theme of your storytelling and what you talk about. And that is hope. And that is kind of what can come next. And share a little bit about what that opens up.
I don't talk about it in my TEDx, but my dad was a Holocaust survivor and he lost all of his family, his mum, his dad, his brothers and sisters. His little brother, Mordechai, was only 6 years old when he was killed in the camps. And he used to say, he obviously escaped because I'm alive. He was in a labor camp and he was on the run for a while and he got false papers. And he used to say he could go days and days without food and water, but he couldn't go a day without hope. And, you know, I just think it was amazing, really. Not really by what my dad said a lot of the time, because, again, he kept his story quite buried quite deep inside of him for lots of obvious reasons. It was too painful to open up. But how he lived his life, he showed me we can get past anything if we really choose to in life. And I used to think, gosh, if my dad can meet my mom, have five of us, and laugh and love life. And, you know, if you met him, you'd never know. He just was tiny, but he was a giant to me. He just mucked about the whole time. And now I see his laughter was his strength, really. That's really what helped him. But to go through one of humanity's worst, I don't even know what you call it, the most degrading atrocity, whatever, in mankind, really, and to come out laughing and love life and still be able to trust people showed me that, gosh, if he can do that, I can do this. You know, I knew one day. And somebody once told me that hope stands for hold on, pain ends. And I think that's true. You know, it really feels like you're never, ever going to get through it. And it really mm-hmm. feels dark for a long time. And you can't imagine ever feeling better. But, yeah, just hold on. Pain ends. The good days will come again. There is always, always light in the darkness.
Oh, that's beautiful. Hold on. Pain ends. I'm going to write that down. And it's so true. And when we think about survivors and think about survivors across the board, and certainly there is so much recognized about this from the Holocaust, mm-hmm. That those with hope and those with a reason for continuing were the ones that tended to fare better, and that it can carry us through so much. And as we look at the individual traumas that we can sustain or the global traumas that still continue, you know, where can we find that small schism, that small split that turns that anger and that not enoughness into an opportunity for self-love and realizing what we can do with our own container?
Yeah, you know, I don't have any superpowers. I'm not superhuman. I'm not super resilient or super strong. All that I have inside of me is inside of everybody. And yes, I had to go and get treatment. I had to get support. I had a lot of talking therapies, body therapies, a lot of alternative therapies. But after a while, I saw I could get trapped by my trauma. You know, it's almost a choice, just repeating the patterns of being in trauma, or I could just choose to stand up to it and say, you know, no more. I'm not going to let this impact on my life. And we have the ability to choose how we respond to anything. You know, it's not what happens to us that is important. It's what we do with it. And after a while, I saw I could live my life through the lenses of a victim forever, or I could just go, you know what, I've actually survived the worst thing any woman could ever go through. So I have the strength inside of me. We all have that. It's just about tapping into it. So it definitely comes with self-care, self-belief, self-love, because for years I loathed myself. I hated myself. I thought I'd brought this on myself. It was my fault. And I just got tired of giving myself a hard time. You know, you have to really learn to treat yourself as if you would treat a little toddler that came up to you and said, I've hurt my knee. You would give him a little kiss on the knee and put a plaster on it. It's so much easier to do it to other people than it is to do it to ourselves. But eventually I saw that the only person that's going to get me through this is me. And that however amount of therapy that I went for, or whichever weird and wonderful workshop I was attending next, you know, it came down to me and my choices that I made. And that switched my mindset. That really did something to my mind, that actually I've survived it already. And these are just pictures that I'm being shown. And the more I stepped into the pictures, the more I accepted everything, the more I stopped denying it, it diluted all the energy that was held in my body. Mm-hmm. So the more you can, you know, as I think I say in the TEDx, the way in really was the way out. I had to really step into my darkest chapters of my life to really open the windows and air it, you know, give it some fresh air.
Well, in that pivotal moment, and I love, you know, we think about that when we see people who have survived and healed and come through. We think, what amazing gift do they have? What are they empowered and what superhuman strength? And I think the biggest gift that comes through that line of healing is that power of a pivotal choice. Mm-hmm. And it does feel like at the moment, and I can speak for myself on that one, is that it feels like it requires superhuman strength. It feels like it's a gritty grating pushing against everything that you've ever known and ever chosen before. And it kind of is.
Yes, it is. It's a good way to describe it. Staying steady, really, isn't it?
Yeah. It's not like,
because it's a habit, you know, we've had this habit for years and years and years. I've been to a shaman, a teacher of life, for many years, and he always talks about just becoming a better surfer. You know, we get knocked off our surfboard, but we just get back on our surfboard. We'll get knocked off it again. Just get back on your surfboard. Learn to surf life better. And that's really what I try to do. Just surf it. Yeah, I'll fall off every now and again, but I get back on and I keep on surfing.
Yeah. And that choice of self-love and that choice of self-discovery is one that gets made every day in 1,000 little ways.
Yes.
So do you have thoughts, suggestions, hopes for our listeners as they are, you know, listening to your incredible story and your incredible recovery and thinking they recognize a little bit of truth in it for themselves too?
Yeah, I would just say really, you know, it's never, ever too late to find your voice, get support, share your story, own your story, stand in your truth, release all the stuff, the shame and the guilt that you think belongs to you that actually never belonged to you. Mm-hmm. Find a therapist, find a friend. If you can't find someone, write your story down. Tell yourself your story. Stop denying, minimizing, pretending it didn't happen. Because when I went for therapy, everything that I discovered, none of it was new to me, really. We know everything that we say. It's just we pretend we don't. We play all these silly games, don't we? But, yeah, none of it was really shocking. I didn't know it all, really. I think owning your story, sharing your story, there's nothing more powerful than that. And to be listened to be heard and to be believed is just, yeah, to get that feedback is huge, really huge.
And if you think about it in the terms of, you know, you're experiencing this trauma because the worst thing you can imagine or a worst thing that you can imagine has already happened to you, how could accepting it and using that power be any worse? Yeah. You know, what is that worst case scenario? Well, you've already lived it. And there's so much power and so much connection in that storytelling.
Yeah. And actually, you know, through violence and through pain, it was my greatest teacher in some way because it really woke me up. And I often think, what would I have been if this didn't happen, which might sound very odd to people. Mm-hmm. I would never really now, if I had the opportunity or a magic wand, undo what happened to me because it really showed me what's important in life. And, you know, I'm going to live my life. A day without laughter to me is a day wasted. I'm here to enjoy my life and live my life. I'm so grateful that I wasn't one of those statistics of a woman that's raped and then murdered because it was very easily could have been that. So I just thought, well, maybe I've been saved for a reason. Am I just going to be a victim for the rest of my days? No, and there must be a reason I survived. I went on to meet my husband, had my three girls, now do the work that I do because I can speak out. So, yeah, I just think in some ways coming very close to not being here gave me immense gratitude for still being on this planet. And when I look at the planet, the billions of years that it's existed, I'm only here for about 10 nanoseconds, really. Yeah. It's a blip. And I think, what am I going to do with these 10 nanoseconds? Am I going to be a victim all my life or am I going to, party? I'm going to have a good time. So, yeah.
Yeah, you're so right. And it's so, I was going to say funny, but that's not quite right. But to say that, I was talking with somebody else and quite often I come into that conversation of those who have survived and healed and recovered through their trauma or recovered through the shames of their past or the perpetrations of their past. And on the other side and seeing who you are and seeing who that strength and then that gift you have to share and that empathy of storytelling, not a single one, including myself, would go back and unwrite it.
Yeah.
And they wouldn't, you know, tell any stories about it being fun, enjoyable, and certainly are not going to sign up to go on that ride again. But here we are on the other side thinking there is a whole lot that comes from that strength and being able to share that story.
Yeah, absolutely. It's taught me so much about life, absolutely. Mm-hmm. And to show me that not just me, but everybody is so much stronger than they think we are. We all have that strength inside of us, you know, and if I can do it, you can all do it too as well.
Yeah, there's nothing terribly special or unique. We're all surviving on this big marble for the 3 seconds we've been here as humanity. Madeline, thank you so much for coming and sharing your short story, sharing your experience and your wisdom. Where can our listeners find you and learn more about your work?
Sure, you can just go to my website, which is madelineblack.co.uk, and it has links there to all my social media, my memoir Unbroken, and my podcast show, which is called Unbroken, Healing Through Storytelling.
Beautiful. And all of that will be in our show notes as well.
Thank you.
Madeline, thank you so much for joining us today. And listeners, thank you for tuning in and listening to these words of wisdom. And I hope the big takeaway becomes, you know, we are all human. We are all deliciously flawed and we are all empowered with a pivotal choice of self-love. And what that power and what that story can do for ourselves and others is limitless.
Thank you.
Thank you. And we'll see you all next week for another episode of the Healing Ground Movement podcast. Be well.
Thank you for listening to today's episode. I hope you enjoyed what you heard and got a little something out of it.
Now remember, the information expressed in these interviews is for informational and not diagnostic or treatment purposes. However, I hope you find that having the right information and resources can go a long way to helping you on your healthcare journey. Ask the right questions and seek out professional help.